Mastermind Agent is proud to present Success Calls. Top real estate agents from across North America reveal their success secrets, strategies, and systems in up-close and personal interviews. You can find all the calls at www.mastermindagent.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Cerrone with Mastermind Agent. This month's top agent is Chris Suarez with Keller Williams Realty in Portland, Oregon. Last year, he closed 220 transactions with a total sales volume of $73 million. His average sales price was $331,000, of which 45% were buyers and 55% were sellers. He operates a team with 11 members, two divisional leaders, two buyer agents, two showing assistants, one listing agent, two transaction coordinators, one listing manager, and one team leader. Chris Suarez is the team leader of PDX Property Group. He's been an agent for 11 years. In this call, Chris talks about starting over in three different markets after three relocations, getting a fast start doing daily open houses, the nitty-gritty details for open house success, developing multiple $20 million niches within your practice, opening a shopping mall kiosk that brought in $13 million in sales in its first full year, using the principles of the MREA book to model and duplicate success, ramping up in a new market and going from zero to $1.8 million in GCI and $1 million in net profit in only 4.5 years, running his team with two codependent divisions, why each buyer agent has their own showing assistant and how it works, team dynamics, compensation, profit margins, and more. Welcome to the call, Chris.
Hey, thanks, Mike. I appreciate you having me on.
Hey, Chris, it's great to have you. Chris, before we get into what you're doing today, let's go back for a minute and talk about what you did before you got into real estate.
So not a whole lot, to be honest. I was actually a pre-law major with a minor in marketing. My first real job was actually interning with some attorneys out in New York. So started in New York, had an internship with some real estate attorneys. That was, to be honest, my last choice on the list of internships. I actually wanted to get into intellectual property, not real property. So it's funny how we end up in things, but wound up interning with some real estate attorneys and then worked for a title company actually in New York that was doing co-op insurance and focused mostly on the co-op and condo industry. And then eventually just met a lot of real estate brokers along the way. New York is an attorney state, so at the closing, it's a lot different than out where I am here in Portland. But everybody that was a party of the transaction showed up at closing, and I just connected really well with the real estate agents and not so well with the attorney side of things. So I just went down a different path, wound up getting my real estate license initially out in New York. So I was 21 actually when I got my real estate license. So I have been doing that ever since.
How long did you practice in New York?
I was out in New York for, I believe it was just under 2 years. So about a year and a half, 18, 19, 20 months, something like that, before I moved out to the West Coast.
And you moved out to Oregon?
I did. And it's interesting. I initially moved out to Eugene, Oregon. So I started real estate, obviously practicing in Westchester County in New York, moved cross country to Eugene, lived in Eugene for about 5.5, 6 years, sold real estate there, which point I picked up and started all over again in Portland. And that was about 7 years ago or so.
Why were you making all those transitions, moving across country and then and moving from one part of Oregon to another after you'd established a business?
That is a great question. And I don't have a great answer, unfortunately, for you. You know, being born and raised in New York, I was ready for a change. I was actually selling real estate in New York when 9/11 happened. So right before that happened, I had come out to Oregon and visited and thought, man, this is, it's just beautiful out here. I'm ready for a life change, and had planned to move. So I moved what was that, 2001? I moved in November of that year to Eugene. And Eugene was a great town, great city, built a business in Eugene, eventually got married. And I'm from New York, my wife's from Mexico City. So Eugene was a relatively small small town for us to be in. And so eventually we knew that we'd end up moving to Portland. And sure enough, about a year after I got married, we decided to make the move to Portland. So I think it's interesting, and it's an interesting part of my story, because it's been three distinct starts to running a business. And typically in real estate, people tend to shy away from making a move or are scared to move and start all over after establishing a solid business, which I've made a habit of it. But now, you know, it's interesting, and we'll talk probably a little bit later about growth and expansion plans. But now as I look back, you know, the one thing I've learned that I do different is, as I moved, I would have left a real estate team practicing. In fact, we're going back into Eugene now as we speak. So it was great. Those moves really helped train me or help me focus on what was the most important thing in a real estate business. So I wouldn't change the moves for anything.
And it's been 5, 6, 7 years, so you're ready for another move.
Yeah, don't tell anyone that. No, I love Portland, and I have kids now, and we're established here, and this will be home base. So real, real excited to have landed in Portland. It's a great city.
Did you have a fast or a slow start in real estate? And as you mentioned, you've been in three different markets. So why don't we take just a quick overview of each one? Did you have a fast start in New York?
You know, I think each of the times I started was a pretty quick start, and that I think just came from being committed to be honest, working hard initially. And my mindset has shifted a little bit, but in New York, when I first started my first year, I was a Coldwell Banker agent. I was Rookie of the Year of that office, which didn't mean a whole lot other than maybe I was the only new agent that they had hired that year. or something like that. But actually, you know, I launched pretty quickly, especially being that young. And then when I moved to Eugene, I was there for about 5 years. And by the time I was there or leaving, I was able to get into the top 10 in the city of Eugene. So it was a pretty quick start. I would say that from the outside, it looked quick. From the inside and doing it, felt like a really, really slow start in real estate. And I don't really believe that I was truly practicing real estate or running a real estate business until probably the last 3 or 4 years of my real estate career, which would mean, you know, for in reality, it was a fairly slow start to learn how to run a real estate business, because, right, this is heading into year 12 or so. There was a couple years off in between in the last 13, 14 years. But when I look at really being in real estate sales, probably 10, 11 years, it took probably six or seven to really understand how the business worked well.
So you were hustling yourself to the top.
Yes, it was time on task. It was work.
Last year was your best year. How many homes did you sell last year?
We closed 220 houses, 220 homes.
What was your sales volume? Do you recall?
We did just about $73 million in volume.
Would you mind disclosing to us what your GCI was?
It was just over $1.8 million in GCI.
Would you mind telling us what your net was out of that?
So I follow a pretty strict guideline in terms of business plan and business model. And my goal really in the last 4 years was to build a real estate business that I could net $1 million or more. So I accomplished that last year. We net a little over $1 million.
Oh, that is amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been an interesting run, but it's been good. It's been really good.
Could you describe to us where Portland, Oregon is?
Yep. So Portland is the largest city in the state of Oregon, in the northwest, the Great Pacific Northwest in the country. So Portland sits right on really almost the coast as the river comes in off of the coast at the northwest tip of the state of Oregon. So we're right on the border of the Oregon-Washington line.
Portland itself, how big is Portland? What's the population in Portland?
Portland population within the city, so Portland proper, is about 600,000-700,000 people. Portland metro, which encompasses really three different counties, almost four different counties, is about just over 2 million in population. And really, we could and do cover parts of three counties, almost four.
Please describe your current market.
Our market is a fairly healthy one as the country goes. Our average price point in the city is about $280 right now, I believe $290. Our average sales price for our team, a little bit higher. Last year, I think it was $330. This year, we're closer to $370 year to date. Average days on market right now for the city, just over 50. So we hover between 50 and 60 days on market. And that obviously, you know, that's as of right now, the summer, it was closer to about 30 days on market. So it's a really, really quick moving market, especially any decent product. We have a range of homes. Really, we have an entry level, middle level, luxury market. We do have luxury, you know, from other people sitting in larger metropolitan markets. Luxury in Portland is anything really 800,000 and up, based on median income. So my team does quite a bit in that luxury market that has been a focus of ours. So that luxury market isn't as large of a pool of sellers or buyers than other right coming from New York, but it's there. And price trend, it continues to go up. This year, we're up about 8%. Last year, we gained about 13%. We'll probably end this year right about 7.5%, 8% up. We're just sort of stabilizing the last 2-3 months.
Chris, do you have a niche or a specialization in your market?
You know, we do. It's interesting because coming from and that's really a product of who I am and how I've had to start over multiple times. I really began my business here in Portland by sitting open houses, really. So that is a niche. I do a lot of public speaking and courses on open houses. That's sort of, I sometimes feel like that actor that does a comedy and can never get a serious role. So open houses is, I guess, my leading role. So definitely a niche in open houses, which then sort of springboarded and sort of rolled into opening up a kiosk in the local mall. So we have a mall kiosk that has actually been really profitable for us and a great way to not only get immediate buyers and immediate sellers, but also work for branding and marketing, which we'll talk about, I'm sure. As a product type, we have really focused on close-in housing and the condo market. And that was a niche of mine and built our really open house strategy and our marketing strategy around those condos. And by so doing, you know, the average time in a condo is not many years. So strategically, that's worked well because people move in and out of condos or move back to homes or into condos from homes. So that was a great launching pad for us. And obviously, repeat and referral. You know, now it's really the fifth year or so that we've been actively selling in the city. So we're really beginning to build that repeat and referral business. And for the first time in my career, the highest percentage of any lead source last year was that repeat and referral. But that was just really a byproduct of choosing lead generation strategies that put us into production, closed deals, and then really followed through with creating a good experience and relationship with that group.
Chris, you mentioned, I think you said close-in housing. What is close-in housing?
Portland is an interesting city, and we have an urban growth boundary. And the city really tries to protect keeping communities and housing and development and new construction close in to the city center. So whereas a lot of other metro areas, you get sort of this sprawl out into the suburbs, Portland is very sort of centrally located. And so our close-in neighborhoods really stem from in and out of city center. So by close-in, it's location-based within the city core.
You mentioned the condo market. Are you working the condo market inside of that city center or that urban core, or are you working the condos all over?
It started by working the working the condos in the city center or the core, really towers. So I worked with some developers on launching some towers and selling through some towers through the good market and the bad. And because of that, just that history and clientele base, then we did branch out and worked on some suburban or out-of-town attached product, townhomes, and condominium product. So it's sort of, if done properly, business should build business, right? So it really started in the core. And that was, if you say, well, where was your focus or what did you do? I focused on the city core because that's where I wanted to be, right? Being the New Yorker, I wanted to be in the city. And so I focused on just educating myself initially on the core market and who were the players and what product was there and what's the history of these buildings. And that's how I really sort of rolled into really launching my real estate career here in Portland.
The buildings that you were working in the condo market, were they already existing? You mentioned something about builders. Were you representing the builder or were you working with them bringing buyers in? How did that relationship work?
Both. What was interesting, though, is I came here with very few relationships. I'd never lived in Portland, right? And so initially, I basically took a role sitting a tower that was someone else's listing, working with someone else's builder client, but just really working the new construction market, which in effect was pretty much an open house every day, right? So I sat there for 6 days a week, really refining my sales skills and critical path of sales skills. And at the end of the day, what that turned into was another builder in town who had shopped or was shopping his competition. One of his agents or representatives walked through one of my projects, and then he reached out to me to come and relaunch one of his personal projects. So it was, oftentimes in this business, we just don't know who's walking into that open house or who's on the other side of the door or who you're about to show a house to. And in my world, we're always on a job interview. And so that played out really, really well. And so I went from really an open house strategy of building a clientele base, a customer base and a knowledge base, really had a work to learn phase when I first moved to Portland, right? Because I sat every day studying product and then connecting with people that walked into a tower or a public open house, and then really built a database around that.
Well, Chris, I want to talk about that topic that you're known so well for. Let's talk about open houses. You are known as an expert in that area, and I think people would like to hear some of your insight there. Let's go ahead and jump right in. Let's first talk about somebody doing an open house. Let's talk about results. In fact, let's talk about your best open house. Could you describe, say, how many people came through and the number of leads, clients, and closings that came out of that?
Sure. We have done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of open houses, to be quite honest. So, as I look at which one was the most effective and which one was the best, there's not one that jumps out that said, well, we had the most people at Open House X. But what I'll tell you is the best open houses we've done have been more an event than an open house. And what I mean by that is, they're open houses that are planned 2 weeks in advance. They're open houses that the public is invited to. The neighbors are personally invited to, whether that be through both phone calls and postcards and mailing and door knocking. But, it is fairly common if we're looking for an event open house to get 30, 40. We've had 50 people through an open house in a fairly short time. We don't do open houses longer than 2 hours. So as opposed to a 3 or 4 hour open house, it means there's a steady stream of people coming through that door. And when we know that or plan that, we have as many, oftentimes we'll have 2 people at that open house. We've had as many as 4 people, depending on the size of the home and how many people we expect to show up.
It sounds like on the upper end, you're seeing 30, 40, 50 people come through and open. If you were to look at all these open houses you've done hundreds of them, and you were to try to average it out, what would an average open house look like for you?
I would say our target for just a regular open house is if we can get 7 to 10 people through, we are very happy. And quite honestly, if we get if we get contact information for five people, we're still happy about that open house. We come from a place of the mindset of we're going to put ourselves in the path of a future buyer and a future seller, or an immediate buyer or immediate seller. Our business, my entire business, is built around those four contact types. So looking at that, for us, if we get one future buyer, one future seller, one immediate buyer, one immediate seller at an open house, that is a win. Especially when looking at all the other strategies that agents sort of look at or try or go to, it's consistently our mindset is, did we add someone to our database? Do we add someone to our database? And so those are the numbers we sort of target and hit. Do we have open houses where two people show up or three people show up? Sure, we do. And I think that the one thing I can say is we believe in consistency and commitment. And so if you consistently execute an open house strategy, everybody's going to have the open house where you think, man, you know, no one showed up. And there's ways to be productive and effective even during that open house that we can talk about later. But looking at that mindset is, if you're consistent and you're committed to doing it at a high level, you can actually operate an entire business with doing nothing but open houses. And that's the, as you say, well, what is your niche? Our growth strategy has been to develop a new niche every year, or every time we get a lead generation strategy or source to get us to, you know, about 20 million in volume, then we look to add the next one. Then we look to add the next one. And a coach of mine said any lead generation strategy could be, if executed properly at a high level, could be a $20 million business model. And so every time I look at, well, are we going to add another lead generation strategy? My question is, could this strategy be a $20 million business model for us?
I'm just doing the math. Does that mean that you have four pillars to the business then? Have you created four $20 million business models inside of your overall business?
Yes. And actually this year, right, our goal this year was to, and are we on target to hit that goal? No. But our goal this year was to go from, right, that 73 to see if we could get into almost 100 million. So this year we're working through that next strategy, which would mean we really have five pillars or five ways to get 20 million. And there's going to be other strategies that filter in, right? And that's just real estate in general. But the ones that we spend money on or the ones that we focus on, our goal is to make sure that we're developing it or perfecting it well enough to get us to a $20 million business.
Well, that's great. And you're currently, just to go back or to recap real fast, what are the four or five pillars you have in your business right now?
So open houses is one. And open houses, we combine our open house strategy with our mall kiosk. We believe that mall kiosk is an open house, right? It's just a perpetual open house 7 days a week that we have staffed. And we can talk a little bit more about that if you'd like. So we have open houses as one strategy. Past client is a strategy we added 2 years ago, right, strategically connecting with these past clients, and that turned into a $20 million business for us very, very quickly. That's really what took us from 40 million to you know, that 42 million to that 72 million mark. Investors, that investor strategy, we have a strategy to connect with investors. That was our third. And then what we group as real marketing. So we do a bit of radio and internet. And those two, that's our marketing strategy. So the open houses is one, repeat referral business is two, our investors was third, and our marketing strategy, which centered around internet and radio, was our fourth.
Well, Chris, thanks for going with me on that roundabout. I want to come back to open houses. You mentioned in a typical open house that you'll have 7 to 10 people through. When you say 7 to 10 people, do you mean individual people or do you mean groups of people through?
I mean, those are 7 to 10 people that we could connect with and could be a potential customer. So it could be a single person, it could be a couple, it could be a family. But we look at if they're getting entered into the database as a potential client, how many walk through the door, and 7 to 10 is typically normal.
Let's talk about promotion and promoting your open houses. Sounds like you have two levels. You do a normal or a typical open house, and then you had something that was a bigger promotion. Could you give us kind of the outline of how you would promote your open houses?
We have a system and a strategy, and it starts a week in advance. we have gone out and done an open house after 3 days of prep as opposed to the seven. But if we're following our system and we expect the same results, we have a very strategic path. So we pick the open house a week in advance. On the first day, that's when we meet and say, okay, this home is going to be open 7 days from now. And we don't just do weekend open houses. We'll do midweek open houses and we'll do evening open houses. So regardless, 7 days ahead of schedule. Assuming, let's for argument's sake, say the open house is going to be on Sunday, well, then it's selected on Monday. On Tuesday, that open house already starts getting posted online. So we advertise that open house the second day. We obtain a call list from our title partner. So we'll get the closest 100 neighbors, as many phone calls as we can get. And then on that second day, a quick mailed invite goes out to that open house. So we haven't made any calls. We just get our list and we mail invites out. That's Tuesday. On Wednesday, we'd post it online again. So it's going to get posted online every day leading up to the open. We would begin calling through that call list, right, calling through the neighbors. And then a sign goes up in the yard saying that it's going to be open that Sunday or that Saturday or that Thursday, whatever it is. So that third day is when that sign goes up after we select the open house. On Thursday, or the fourth day, we post it online again. We continue to call through those neighbors. We actually send an invitation out to the database, specifically database people that are within that area, so we can pull which locations people are looking for homes in. We will actually go through all of our old sign calls on that particular listing and any contact that we've received through the internet on that one listing and invite them to the open house. We've often found that some of our traffic isn't new traffic, but it was a sign call or an internet lead that just didn't want to set up an appointment, but that feel much more comfortable showing up to an open house if they knew it was there. On Friday, we post online. We set up an electronic file where everything is going to get put for that open house. So our market stats get prepared. Those are the closest active pending solds, right, in the last 60 days. We get our flyer. We don't use print, so we just do a digital flyer, and we get that in the digital folder for the address for that open, and then just statistics, what we call our total market overview for that neighborhood, which will just give them a rundown of every price range in the neighborhood, how fast is the market moving, just some real statistics. So we now have a digital folder created and prepared for the agent that's going to be going out and hosting that open house. On Saturday, again, we post it online. We get directionals installed. We typically door knock that day or right before the open, depending on the schedule of the agent. And then we'll invite to steer and post it on social media the day before the open house. And then we have the day of the open house, which we basically do everything again that we just did on Saturday, posting it online, continue door knocking. If you didn't do it the day before, invite your sphere and post on social media again.
Wow. Wow, you know it. You cruised right through it, and I was trying to keep up. Thank you for laying that all out there. I have a few questions as you were working through that. First of all, you said you post on the internet. Where are you posting?
I'm a Keller Williams agent. We post in the back end of our system, and that actually gets syndicated out to most every other site. But we are posting on, I believe, three or four other portal sites. One of them is Craigslist. We post on Kijiji. I think we post on classifiedads.com. So there's three or four different sites. Our administrative team does that, and they're always looking for new strategic ways to get that out there. But the reality, and making sure in the back, you're right, RMLS for us is that public site, is a really, really common site. Oftentimes we don't put it in there. We don't think to put it in there until right Friday or Saturday, because that's the day we decide to do our open house. But what we found is by putting it in the public remarks as well as in the open house section a week in advance, we will actually get more calls off of it, specifically around that open house that they're seeing in the public remarks. So that's been a good strategy. I mean, does it take planning? Yep. Does it take preparation? Yep. Does it take commitment? Sure, because on Monday, we've already committed to Sunday. So for us, and I know the typical real estate agent, well, it looks like I might have Saturday afternoon open. Yeah, maybe I'll do an open house. And that's why agents feel that open houses aren't successful, because it's not purposeful and it's secondary. And actually the mindset that we go into the open house is, well, it's really, I just had some open time. So if I get a lead, great. If not, I wasn't doing anything anyway today. So it changes a lot when so much effort, right, from an administrative team as well as a licensed agent goes into an open house. They are there to build a database. Their mindset is, I'm taking time, it's purposeful, and I'm coming back to the office with people to put in the database.
You mentioned that a few times. Your goal at the open house is to build the database, and I believe you mentioned there are four categories that you're building up. What were those again?
We have an immediate buyer and an immediate seller. So these are people that we feel that, hey, in the next 30 to 60 days, they could be buying a home or listing their home. And then we have a future buyer and a future seller. Those are people that are just starting their search. They might be every neighbor that we meet. Our goal is to get them into our database as a future seller, because if they own a home one day, they probably will sell. And I don't really care if it's a year from now, 3 years from now, 10 years from now. I plan on being in business. And so they go in as a future buyer or future seller.
You mentioned on day two that you're getting a list, a call list. I think you said you got it from your title company.
Yep.
How many people are you getting on that list? And I assume that's just the people right around the home that you're going to hold open. How many people?
Correct. So typically, if we're pulling an area of 100 to 150 homes around that home, we're going to get a phone list of about maybe 30 people. You know, anywhere between 25 and 30 people. And some of those numbers are great. Some of them aren't. That's okay. Our goal is to be able to touch or connect with those neighbors multiple times in that path, right? So we know that the phone might be one of them. We know that the postcard they're going to get is going to be one of them. We hope that the sign is going to be one of them. We hope that they actually come to the house, and that's another touch. So right there, that's four touches. And to create a client or to create mind share for the neighborhood, in the MREA book, the Millionaire Real Estate Agent book, which is really where I base my business off of, there's a strategy that says, okay, if you can connect with someone eight times in 8 weeks, then you're going to create mind share. There's tons of studies that prove that to be true. So my goal is, as I go into an open house, is there a way for me to connect or get in front of this potential person eight times in 8 weeks? Or really, to be honest, our strategy is eight times in 4 weeks. So we look for different ways to get in front of the same number of people. Sure enough, we might door knock them too, right? So whether we leave something on the door or we meet them face-to-face, and we don't meet a ton of people. But again, if for the person that we do meet, you have to believe that they got our postcard, they see our sign, they met us in person, maybe they show up to the open. Right? In a matter of a weekend or a matter of a week, we could potentially touch them five times. And that's true mind share. And that's the mindset that's why open houses to me is a no-brainer to build a business, whether you're just starting out or you've been in business for 20 years. If you committed to a strategic open house plan, you're going to build. Your business is going to get bigger.
You're building a little mini database to target for this open house. You've just talked about making the phone calls, 100 to 150 people in the neighborhood. You might have 30 good phone numbers. Are you also doing the same number of people for, say, your postcards? Are you sending out postcards to that same 100, 150? And are you also doing door knocking to that same 100, 150?
Yeah, so the postcards go out to the same group. So again, some of them we may have called, some of them we may not have if we didn't get their number. The door knocking, we don't door knock that many people. You know, we started and the goal was to, we want to door knock 50 homes. I get in real life, oftentimes that doesn't happen. And what really began happening with us, because it was such an insurmountable number, the agents and myself included just stopped altogether, right? If we're not going to get to 50, we're not going to do it. So right now on our team, we have a strategy that says that if you're going to be on a street, door knock up and down at least a minimum of that one street in front of that house. So on average, we may door knock 12 to 15 doors. And yet, I think when we chunk things down and we give ourselves a number that is 100% attainable, then we do it. One of the questions my coach often asks me, is, are you sure, right? When I say I'm going to do something, are you sure you're going to do that? Well, maybe not. Okay, well, what can you do? Okay, so, right, I'll door knock 100 doors. Are you sure? Well, maybe it's 50. Are you sure? I definitely can do 20. So I do think in our business, right, many of us think really, really big, and sometimes we get ourselves into overwhelm, and then we just don't do anything. So we did chunk that down. So we door knock less, yet we're more consistent with it, which is really what we're trying to accomplish.
You mentioned 8 contacts in 8 weeks for this group of people. Are you doing your open houses in the same neighborhoods every time, kind of like a geographic farm? Or are you doing this all throughout the city, some here and some there, and kind of moving around?
Good question. So it started very geographical. So when I first came to Portland, I picked neighborhoods that I wanted to build in. I wanted to, in terms of build a business in, I wanted to... they were close in neighborhoods. I liked the neighborhoods. I wanted to work in them. And so I strategically chose my open houses there. As my business grew and as we built a listing inventory, obviously our listings went outside of those neighborhoods just by nature of adding in marketing and referral-based business. So we will do open houses outside of our target neighborhoods. But to begin with, the first couple years that we were launching our business, it was really, really focused on a geographic area where we could create some mind share around our brand. And that was really important for us. And I think it was a big piece of our success early on to build that database of people that really knew us and connected with us multiple times. It's interesting. We'd have people that would come up, you know, we'd see them at the second, third, fourth open house. And at that point, you have to believe that when they're ready to hire an agent, it's going to be us. And oftentimes it was. So it was strategic. What I will say on that, and I think it's an important piece, When I first started, we didn't just do Saturday and Sunday opens. I didn't have listings, right? I was new to the city as well. So I looked for agents in my office that had listings in specific neighborhoods that I wanted to work. I looked at what traffic patterns there were. I looked at commuting times. I looked at if there was a school nearby when parents were dropping off and picking up. And then I would strategically pick and choose homes to hold open at random times where I thought traffic count was going to be higher, because whether they came in that open house or not, they were going to see my signs in the neighborhood, and oftentimes it did increase my traffic too, which put me face to face with them. So I would do lunchtime opens around Artillery Streets that led to office parks or where there were a lot of people working or where people would be driving past to go to lunch. I would do commute time open houses. So 4 to 6 is a phenomenal time for open houses in neighborhoods as people are driving back home. And, you know, you might think, well, who wants to stop into an open house? If they do, you know, they're probably pretty serious, either as a future seller because you're really looking for neighborhood people, or, right, they are thinking about buying and they're going to stop on their way to work to see that open. And if nothing else, they obviously saw my sign and my brand. Same thing with school drop-offs and pickup. I would do sort of mid-afternoon. Parents were picking up kids at, you know, 1:30, 2:30. So we would do 1 to 3 open houses as well in specific locations. And I think as agents, we forget or we think open houses are for weekends. And I would have the public say, "You're doing an open house right now?" And my response would be, you know, my goal is to work hard for my client, right? So I'm here trying to sell this house for my client. So when you come from the mindset of, I can either sit in my office, right? And some people are great at cold calling. That honestly wasn't me. I can sit in my office and cold call and try to get in front of voice to voice, a potential buyer or potential seller, or I could get into the path of a buyer or seller. And that's really where that idea of, well, why not do open houses 4 days, 5 days, 6 days a week? I mean, if I wasn't a real estate agent and I had taken a corporate job, right, even in the legal field, I'd be going to work. I'd be showing up to my office from 8 to 6 or 9 to 5 or whatever it is. Yet as a real estate agent, we just don't commit to a schedule. Well, am I going to sit in my office making calls from 9 to 5 every day? No, but I guarantee you, if you had 2 or 3 open houses a day, 5 days a week, you'd be one of the top agents in this country. And we just don't commit to the schedule that it takes to do it. So that really, honestly, I wanted to get into immediate production. I don't like doing anything too slow. It's just my personality. And so that was a way for me to immediately break into the Portland market really quickly.
I'm still looking at the schedule you laid out for us and the different number of days. You said you put a sign up in the yard. What does that sign look like? What's on it?
It is just a square that sits on a wire frame. We go out, we drive in, we stick it in the grass, and it's next to our sign, the actual yard sign. And all it says is open Sunday or open Saturday, open Thursday. And there's hours on it from 1 to 3. And what we found is we actually wound up, you know, people will drive by that sign multiple times, perhaps leaving the neighborhood or coming into the neighborhood. And we had neighbors notice it. So we wound up getting more neighbors showing up to our open house, which, to be honest, is, you know, our strategy is really geared towards connecting with future sellers in that neighborhood, even more so than buyers. We believe that if we control the market and have listings, then the buyers are going to come. So really that open Saturday, open Sunday, open Friday, open Tuesday sign really generated more potential seller traffic than even buyer traffic.
You put that right next to the for sale sign. Do you also put a rider up on top, or is this kind of in lieu of the old rider that you put up on top for the open?
It's in lieu of the rider. Now, once in a while, depending on our sign inventory, sometimes we will end up with a rider. But what we found was with the sign that sits in the yard, we were able to, instead of just saying, you know, those riders typically say open Sunday or give the day, we have signs that we can change out the times, and we weren't stuck from 1 to 3 on Sunday. Because we really will look at what's going on in the neighborhood. Are there any, right, is there a football game? Is something going to drive traffic or inhibit traffic, and then we'll work around the schedule. So we wanted something a little bit more organic that we could change out fairly, freely, which the signs that we put in the yards allow us to do that.
Do these signs, can you write on them with, say, a grease marker, or are they professionally printed the day and the time?
They're printed, and then they have two plastic sleeves where we just have the number, right, printed numbers, and we pull out the two numbers and we put in two new ones each time we make a change in time.
What color is that sign? Is there a certain color that stands out better?
I don't know. I mean, ours are pretty, and ours actually, those are not branded. They are just an unbranded red and white sign with black letter. So the sign is red and white, and the open Sunday and the times are in black.
How big is that sign?
It's about the same, maybe a little bit smaller than a typical real estate sign. So it may not be great with feet and inches, but think a real estate sign that's just slightly smaller, and it sits on a wire frame.
On day 4, you mentioned that you go out, you invite your database in an area, and you also mentioned old sign calls and internet leads. Is that the same thing? Is that the same group or a different group?
We have a couple back-end platforms that generate buyer leads, or we can see where buyers are shopping. So our platforms allow us to look in specific areas or see where people are searching. So we'll actually pull up an open when we know we have an open that day. Our team goes into the back end of our system and says, okay, which buyers are shopping or have been looking at houses in that neighborhood, and they get an email, an invitation to that open house. And it may not even fit their criteria, but we just, one, it makes us look like we're active in the market. Two, it's a great touch that isn't asking them, right, are you ready to buy? So that's basically the buyer, perhaps a buyer database. Our personal contact or sphere database, depending on location, will invite those people too. So if we've listed or sold someone or a family or a client a home in the neighborhood, they'll get invited to our opens too, because we'd love to see past clients step in, which happens a lot, and that's a good face-to-face contact. And that's a little bit more organic.
What software are you using? You mentioned platform. You also mentioned database. Is that the same thing? And what software are you using?
We have a couple different setups. So we use Top Producer. So our Top Producer is, we can tag and flag people by area, location, who they are. The buyer platform that we use, one of them is actually the back end of our website, which is just a custom website that we can actually see what houses people are searching on or what what areas or neighborhoods they have saved. And then we have a Keller Williams eEdge site is what it's called, and it's basically a lead generation platform where we can generate leads and again, track buyer activity fairly well. So between those two, we'll go in and connect with where people are.
Chris, you mentioned on day five, you have this electronic file, a digital folder. Is that something like Dropbox?
Yep, it is. So we've used Dropbox, and we've also used ShareFile, which is a little bit more robust, and it actually allowed us a lot more, one, safety and storage. And so right now we're using a platform called ShareFile. There's an app on everybody. Everyone that does open houses on the team have iPads. And so basically we set up a digital folder with the address. And under that address, that agent knows going out that they're going to have a digital flyer, they're going to have statistics for the area, and they're going to have comps for that house. So it really takes a lot of pressure off of us individually. It also eliminated print, so it saved some money. I think from a business perspective. And it also, more importantly, the strategy was let's get some items of value that we have at that open house that people can't just take and walk away with, but rather they may want, and we get to email it to them. So if we have to email it to them, they have to give us their email, which allowed us to increase the number of people that we're registering or at least getting contact information for.
On day six, you mentioned contacting your sphere of influence, and I think you also said social media. Where are you posting the event?
Social media, we actually want everybody on the team to support each other's open houses. So we're all posting each other's open houses through our social media, whether that be Facebook. For me, what's so funny is, with my age, people think I'm going to be super techie, and I'm not. I really use it if it gets stuff done. Everything else people handle for me. But I'll post the open houses on social media, and then we have team Instagram that we have some past clients that follow us. And on there, they're just getting pictures of cool houses that come on the market or perhaps new listings. But we'll post our opens on our social media so that all of our past clients, because we've connected with past clients on social media strategically, that they can see that we're holding something open, perhaps in the neighborhood, perhaps not, but we post it there.
Well, Chris, you start to bring up the reason that you have this digital information, and it sounds like it's tying into my next question, which is, how are you capturing that contact information to put into your database?
It's a strategy. If we go into the open house without the mindset that the only way we win here is if we build a database, if we're not thinking like that, it's easy to have people walk in and walk out, walk in and walk out, walk in and walk out. We hope they take our card, and we hope they love the house, or maybe they'll call us, or maybe we connected really well. And at the end of the day, if they're shopping open houses, they're probably on their way to the next one. And so I always believe that, one, we need to show up as the most educated agent they're going to meet today. And two, we have to do a better job of getting their contact information than any other agent. And typically, I come from the frame of mind that if I'm going to ask you for something, I'm also going to give you something. So that's why we believe we have three things that could be an item of value. And the first one's a flyer of the house, right? The digital flyer for the house. So that's in our Dropbox, and if they want information on the house, we can email it to them, and they could get it on their smartphone right there, right? I mean, and everyone, whether they want to email directly or they want a link to our website with the house, and we can do either one of those. So we use digital flyers. The next thing is, we do believe that the economics of real estate is what people care about, and that is sort of something that I've made a commitment to my team, is just staying on top of the economics, knowing the market, being able to provide some real value to someone that, right, wants to think logically and understand what's going on. So we have a total market overview that a third-party company does, and it's actually, right, they're called TMOs, Total Market Overview. And you can get them in a lot of different market areas now. The company out of Spokane that puts those together. So we subscribe, and we get a weekly TMO that basically compiles all of our MLS data into a very, very easy, area by area chart. And we have one for every area. We have one for the entire city and then area by area. And that has been a tremendous tool for us to at least have some statistics on that neighborhood that they're in. And we ask them if that would be of value to them. If they're shopping for a home, typically they want to see what's going on in the neighborhood. And more importantly, if they're a seller, they want to know what's going on in the neighborhood. So we have that as an item of value, and we'll share it with them and show it to them on the iPad and then ask them if they want a copy. And then the third thing is obviously comps, the actual comps of the listings. And there are other active listings in the neighborhood. So if they're out shopping for a home and we say, would you like a list of all the homes that are immediately available so you can drive around and even look at the exteriors while you're out looking for homes today, that's another way to, again, get their email address, and it gets emailed right over to them. So those are the main three things that we use. Realtor.org has a great app. I think it's Bright Open. And Bright Open is links to all of your owned listings. So they're, if you're at an open house, it's your listing. It'll pull up your RMLS ID. In our area anyway, and then create just a really, really quick flyer of the house that you're in. So it shows the house that you're in, and then if they want a market report on their home, so for instance, if a seller comes in, we'll actually have that app open, and they can get immediately an email, basically a market snapshot to them. And Top Producer has the same thing, a market snapshot, right? But it'll send them just a quick rundown of what's going on in the market. But again, every single one of those is a strategy to get their email address. And once they give you their email address, they sort of open up, right? You can contact them. Oftentimes, the script that I use is, can I, and right there on my iPad, we have a Google Doc. Our team operates off of a lead sheet, and every open house lead then that comes through, it basically looks like a sign-in sheet. Ultimately, it's a lead sheet that our virtual assistant can pull off immediately because it's a live document. But typically, the script that I use is there a number that I can reach you in case the email comes that bounces back, right? So in case the email doesn't get out to you. And at that point, it's really hard to say no. And some people will, but you know, 6 or 7 times out of 10, if you use that script, is there a number that I could reach you in case the email comes back unreturned? Most times they're going to give me their phone number. Otherwise, it gets a little bit awkward. So that's a strategy that I use to get email first and then hopefully a phone number. And oftentimes, I mean, there are many people that are private that might say, no, I'm good, I don't need that. So at that point in time, I'll say, and maybe it's almost going backwards, but the first question that I ask every open house guest and the question that every one of our agents uses is, are you out shopping for a home today, or do you happen to live in the neighborhood? So someone walks into the open house, I greet them, and then I say, are you out shopping for a home today, or do you happen to live in the neighborhood? And my goal right there is to figure out, is it a buyer or is it a seller? Is it a buyer or is it a seller? Because it's in my world, it's one of those two people. And so then I can sort of craft or steer my conversation. If it's a seller, I want to know, why are they out looking? Are they just nosy? Are they thinking about selling? They're going to care more about values in the neighborhood than actual homes or product in the neighborhood. So by asking that really, very easy, simple, non-pushy question, you'll get a response. Now, my next goal, the next step would be if they live in the neighborhood, and again, because of what we do, most are sellers, most are neighbors, right? They've seen signs, they've gotten postcards, their door got knocked on, they got a phone call, whatever the case might be. If they live in the neighborhood, I will always say, well, it's great to meet a neighbor. I'm glad you came in to take a look at the house. What was your name? And I know if I can get a last name, then I will actually be able to add a full address and have a future seller in my database. Now, oftentimes they'll be like, well, I'm John. And if they say, I'm John, my next question is, and what was your last name? And by getting that last name, very few people are going to be like, well, I don't want to share that, right? But if I have their last name and I know they live in the neighborhood, the next thing I do when my open house is done or my assistant does is pull the name, pull the area, and find out where they live and get their address. Now, I hope during our conversation I'm able to get their email address and phone number too, But if I'm not able to, I at least have now a future seller that can go on a mail campaign and I can connect with and at least write a thank you card immediately because I have their address. And they don't ever have to give me their address. I pull it off the tax records. So really, all of our questions are geared initially to get them down the path of getting some sort of contact information while not making them feel awkward or uneasy.
Starting at the very beginning when the people walk in, you said you greet them and you ask them the question to decide whether they're going left or right, whether they're a buyer or a seller. Are you shopping for a home today or do you happen to live in the area? Once you've determined whether they're a buyer or seller, do you have a second script that you use to either go with a buyer or go with a seller?
Yep. My next question or our next question, if it's a buyer, so let's say, oh, we're just beginning our search. And then I would say, great. Well, how have you been getting into homes? That's my next question. How have you been getting into homes? Because if they're just looking at open houses, that tells me something. If they say, oh, we have an agent, that tells me something too. So I don't love the, do you have an agent? Because it comes across like I'm an agent that hopes you don't have an agent and I want you as a client. But if I know how they've been getting into homes, then I'll know if they're working with an agent or not. And if they say, well, you know, our agent's been opening it up, oh, great, who is that? So it keeps the conversation moving forward and you're developing, whether they realize it or not, you are actually having a conversation and it's people to people as opposed to salesperson to buyer. So that's the conversation I have if it's a buyer. And if it's a seller, typically the next question I ask is, are you familiar with property values in the area? Do you stay on top of property values? And if they say yes, I say, well, that's great. Most sellers do. And then I say, would it be of value to you? If you received and whatever I'm going to offer them. And that was a script that I got, and I can't remember where it came from, but when you ask, would it be of value to you? Again, I am a very scripted person, obviously. And when I say that, when you ask that question, it's pretty difficult for someone to say no. I mean, it's a leading yes, right? If you're asking someone, would it be of value to you if, it sort of leads them down the have to say yes, because if they say no, it would be of no value, right? It's no value to know what's going on in my neighborhood. It's just an awkward no. So you want to give them a very easy yes, and so that's why I use that language.
So the buyers, you mentioned if they have an agent, the conversation is going to start winding down. If you ask them the question, you know, have you been getting into the houses? And they just say, well, I've been going to open houses, or they don't indicate in any way they have an agent, what would be the next thing that you say to the buyer?
Typically at that point, I say, would it be valuable to you if we put together a private tour in one afternoon so you could see all the homes at once instead of waiting for them to come on the market when they're open?
What percentage of the people say yes?
At that point, not a lot, to be honest, and that's okay, because now I've developed enough rapport that I could ask them to send them a list of homes. So if they say, no, we're not quite there yet, the next step would be, right, I have that list of comps in the iPad. The next step is, well, you know, I can email you straight from my iPad a list of everything that's available right now. So even today, whether it's open or not, you could at least drive by and take a look and get an idea of values and what homes are selling for in this neighborhood. Would that help? And typically at that point, they're like, yeah, that's right. They've already said no. So typically at that point, you know, they'll say, oh, yeah, yeah, I guess that's fine. Yeah, that's good. And I would say that probably 50 to 60% of the buyers that come in, we can capture their contact information. Sellers is higher, and it doesn't mean that we're getting their email or phone, but, you know, 80% of potential sellers, we're going to get them into our database, and that's because I'll get their last name, and they've told me that they live in the neighborhood.
With a little bit of research.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned it earlier, how you were going along and gathering the data. It sounded to me like you're going for that email first, even before you ask for their name. Is that true? You somehow collect that email because they want something of value sent to them. And then after that, do you step back and say, oh, by the way, what is your name?
No, well, not necessarily. I mean, I would hope in the beginning as they walk in, I do introduce myself and my name. They may or may not give me theirs. And oftentimes I will ask. But if for some reason, if they don't give it to me, then I'll move forward and try to make sure I capture their name. And I'll tell you, right, there has been countless people that I got their name and then I forgot, and it's very awkward to ask again. So that's
right.
Where that is why we started. Right, I have a Google Doc open on my iPad, and as soon as I get their name, the minute right they move to a different area or they look away, or I'm actually typing in their name because I'm not great with names, and once I get it, that is a contact. I better type it out and write it down so I don't forget it.
That's how you're tracking it. You're tracking it right there in your iPod. As you mentioned, as the conversation wanes for some reason, you can immediately type that in.
Correct. Yep. And then that is a live document. So instead of now having to take it off of a sheet and put it somewhere else, our virtual assistant or administrative staff can take those names, enter them into our database as an open house lead, and know exactly what comes next. So if I have an address and it's a seller, I'm going to get a note to say, hey, write a thank you note to this person on Monday. So it's specific.
So you don't use a registration book. Did you try that in the past and it either worked or didn't work?
We have done it in the past. When we went to digital flyers and everything digital, we just moved it over and it saved us a step. For those people that might be uncomfortable with an iPad or something like that, registration books work just fine. I come from new construction where everybody has to do a registration card or a sign-in. So those don't make me uncomfortable at all, and I think they can be just as effective. It was just a lot easier for me to gain contact information by having an item of value digitally that I can email them. So that's how that sort of developed and came about.
This is the end of part one. The interview continues on part two.